This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis. You're listening to The Other Side of the News here on WCRS, your community radio. And we're bringing you some hardcore community sports. I've got Jessica Avatar Fox, Paige Bleed, but we'll shorten that to Paige, and Andrew Marone, a.k.a. Inspector Muffin, as well as Jerry Bello, sports writer for the freepress.org and the Columbus Free Press. Welcome to The Other Side of the News.
Thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
And let's give them the other side of sports, a side that isn't often emphasized in the for-profit media. That is it roller derby still? It's not. It hasn't hyped up the Ohio roller derby team here. And again, in the old days, right, roller derby got the reputation as being sort of like wrestling. Now, I've read Jerry's coverage in detail, and he says that it's absolutely one of the most competitive sports, and that it's hardcore, that it takes a tremendous amount of skill. So let me go over. Jessica, what position do you play?
Well, she's Jesse. I'm Jessica in real life. But I play both blocker and jammer lately. Typically, I play blocker. We're the people, there are four blockers on each team, and we help our jammer, who's the person wearing the star and the helmet, get through the pack the first round, and then every round after that, score as many points as they can by passing the opponent's hips.
Okay, so in some basic levels, a little like football, but on roller skates.
I've always kind of thought of it as if you like football, the physicality of football, you'll love roller derby. If you're a NASCAR fan, you'll love roller derby. If you're a hockey fan, you're going to love roller derby. You put all those
checks,
together.
Collisions, all in one sport.
Yeah, and I actually envy the blockers, you know, Avatar Fox and Paige Bleed, because in other sports, roller derby is pretty much the only sport where your blockers are playing both offense and defense simultaneously. You're trying to stop the other blocker, you're trying to position yourself, you're starting to stop the other jammer while positioning yourself against other blockers and helping your own jammer through. So you're playing offense and defense at the same time.
Well, let's go to Paige Bleed. What can you tell us?
It's the best thing I've found. I've been playing for 4.5 years now, and wouldn't trade it for the world. I grew up skating and then played broomball in high school, so I figured, well, you combine the two, it's close enough. And,
Well, Avatar Fox. Yeah. And does everyone on the team get a name like that, or where did those come from?
You get to originate your own name, so a lot of people...
You don't have to earn it?
No, there's no hazing process or anything like that. We encourage women who start with the league to do, you know, as they wish. Mm-hmm. Now there's kind of a trend where a lot more of us are actually skating with our real names as well as our derby names, or just under our real names, which is kind of the approach I've taken. So my name is Jesse Fox, but I also skate as Avatar because I think it's fun and it's nice. It's kind of something that sets us apart from other sports. It gets something to get the kids into the sport as well. So it kind of has a good marketing purpose as well as kind of the historical association with the origins of the sport.
Now, what's your background in sports? Did you play other sports before coming to roller derby?
Yes, I'm a lifelong athlete. I played softball, volleyball, and soccer for a long time. Did some kickboxing for a while, so I have a nice history of aggression.
All right.
You can stay.
I'm thinking, from the Detroit area, I remember quite well hockey on roller skates used to be played regularly in that city. Now, Inspector Muffin, will go to your announcing name. If I come in, I'm a casual fan, first time, will I be able to tell what's going on, or do I need to study the rules?
It might take you a couple jams. Game's broken up into 2 30-minute halves, and each 30-minute half is broken into as many 2-minute jams as possible. So consider it a 10-second football play that lasts a full 2 minutes. So it might take you a couple 2-minute jams to pick up, but once you get through the actual application, the rules themselves are fairly simple. If you get caught doing a penalty, you go to the penalty box. If you're a jammer, every person you pass is going to be a point. If you can keep up with that, I try to tell people that are new to the sport, try to focus on one person each jam, try to focus on someone different each jam, whether it be the jammer or a blocker, and just kind of see what their strategy is throughout the play. But at the door at all of our bouts, we have pamphlets that explain the rules, and there's other roller girls that are constantly skating around, more than willing to ask questions.
So is it uneven? How many people can be in the penalty box? Is it like hockey, where you can have 5-on-3? How uneven does it get?
It can get, the most uneven it can get is, well, 5-on-1, I guess.
5-on-1?
Yeah, that's never good as a coach or a skater if you're
it
on the one side.
It happened to me in Toronto.
I remember that.
Yeah, you can have one jammer sitting in the penalty box, and you can have two blockers sitting in the penalty box and one blocker standing. So that would be 4 of your 5 skaters.
So you have to leave one jammer on the floor?
The jammers can get penalties, and since they're the ones scoring points, if they go to the penalty box, your team's not scoring points.
Well, let's go to Avatar Fox. What was it like to be 5-on-1, Dad? Did you win?
I did win the jam, actually. the other jammer thought she was going to be clever and try to apex jump, which means essentially jump over a portion of the track in order to avoid making contact with me, but I foresaw her move and was able to block her and knock her to the ground, which means she scored 0 points on the pass and had to call off the jam. So it wasn't the worst situation. It's been more disastrous than that on a number of occasions, however.
Jerry Bello, any questions since you've been at some of these roller derby events? You've covered them at the Free Press. People can read about that at freepress.org. What are your thoughts on roller derby?
Well, my thoughts are I come at this in a really partisan way. This is our team. This is Columbus's team. There are other teams. They exist so that our team can score points and have wins, so far as I'm concerned. Because if we're going to, if we're going to cover or support a team, we should do as much for this team as the Dispatch does for the Jackets. Well,
but the Dispatch owns part of the Jackets.
Well, we're non-profit, so
it hasn't colored our coverage. But
so, if I'm going to ask a question, I'm going to say, what are we looking at going into the bout in Indianapolis in NapTown?
Well, as of right now, the Ohio Roller Girls are sitting at 4-1. We're currently ranked 20th in the world. That is the world. We do have 3 international teams in the top 15 now that Toronto's shot up to 13. But NapTown is going to be a very good test for us. We're currently 2-2, I believe, against NapTown. We won the last bout here in Columbus, but they smoked the crap out of us at playoffs 2 years ago, and it still kind of stings a little bit to even think about that game. Right now, NapTown's ranked 11th in the world, so 9 spots ahead of us. It's going to be an extremely, extremely physical bout. They're a smart team. They play together. They have one of the best 3 jammer rotations in all of roller derby, with Made in America, G-Rocket, and Amuse-Bouche. Great coaching staff, and I know we're looking forward to getting at it.
And are you competitive with our announcer? Does it go to that level?
I'm very friendly with our announcer. There's a good camaraderie. I guess I'm kind of in a fortunate area to where I started off helping with the Ohio Roller Girls as the announcer. I've been the announcer for 3 years. I still announce for the reserve squad, Gang Green, but I made the transition into coaching the charter team, the ranked team, in the off season. So that is my new passion. But I'm still very friendly, and they offer good advice if I ever need it.
So Avatar, what about the upcoming roller derby event? How do you see it?
Well, I'm super excited to be playing NapTown again, because they are, just like any sport, we kind of have teams that are somewhat our rivals, and I would consider them, you know, our true rivals, our arch rival, I think, out of St. Louis would be our probably top rivals. But I think Naptown is in that top three of teams that we're very competitive with. We're very equivalent in terms of skill sets. And so it's always going to be a challenge, and it's always going to be a very exciting game for the fans. And there's greater satisfaction when we come out of that one with a victory. So, and as Andy mentioned, the playoff loss 2 years ago was not our favorite period in history, I would say. It was a rough game. I think we were down to like 9 players out of a roster of 14, so we were kind of limping to the finish line in that case. So it's nice to go through there with a full roster and a strong roster and have another showdown.
Paige, your thoughts?
I'm going to second Ava. I was one of the 9 of the demolished roster, and it was a painful loss, but a great learning experience. And to come back and beat them the following year, really the best part was that they had to... we played them at the last minute on a Wednesday night, I believe, at our warehouse, because they had not gotten in enough.
Now, what's your warehouse for the listeners when you say our... Do you literally play in a warehouse?
We have a practice space that's in a warehouse, yes. And we practice there up to 4 days a week. So, yeah, we have, you know, our track set up, and for about to be sanctioned, you only have to have... you have to... have a space that's certain size specifications, track taped, a certain number of refs, and non-skating officials. So we were able to pull it together on about a week, 2 week notice to get them so that they could qualify for their playoffs the following year. So it was a pretty satisfying win.
All right, so which immediately puts you ahead of the Blue Jackets because they won their first ever playoff game. What's your history in terms of ratings and playoff contentions?
We went to playoffs. This is our 3rd year in a row of going to playoffs, and we have 4 playoffs, and then after that there's the World Championships. So for the first 2 years, we made it into playoffs, but we did not make it to championships. Last year, we actually made it to the World Championships, won our first game, but then lost the next one. So.
Now, is it literally a World Championship, meaning there are teams outside the United States?
Absolutely. We last season, Montreal out of Canada was expected to be the first international team to make the World Championship tournament. But they lost to a pretty good Ohio Roller Girls team in the playoffs, so we knocked them out, and they eventually had to play the London Roller Girls out of England for the 3rd and final spot out of our playoff location. London ended up beating them, and London went on to the World Championships to be the first internationally represented team. But right now, Bob, you know, like I said, there's three teams. London, London is ranked in the top 5. Toronto is ranked 13th, and Montreal is ranked 14th in the world.
Now, have you ever beaten any of those teams?
We are historically 8-1 against international competition. We just lost our first game to Montreal in March, but we were 3-0 against Toronto and 2-0 against Montreal up until March.
Jerry, did you go? Was it Toronto you saw playing here? Was it?
No.
Which one was it you wrote about?
I saw Tri-City playing here. I saw them play, which is Kitchener, Waterloo, Ontario. And I also watched the Quad Cities Chaos Tournament streaming, and I reported on it for the Free Press. I watched all the bouts individually and wrote them up individually. I've seen our team play on the road. I'm really looking forward to going on the road and actually being there to cover a game as opposed to watching it streaming, which is not nearly as much fun, really.
So how many fans go to the actual event, and what's it cost and where that's played if I wanted to go see it?
The last time I actually did an impartial head count, I saw 800 people in the stands. I actually counted them.
And derby attendance varies quite broadly depending on which community you're in. So Seattle, Rat City is one of the most popular teams in the United States, and they can pull in 7,000 people into Key Arena. Cincinnati brings in, what, about 3,000 a game. So, you know, certain teams in certain markets do tend to have a very strong fan base and a very popular group. We're lucky to have Columbus behind us. We do have regular attendance of around 1,800 to 1,000 people at games, which is awesome.
This is WCRS 98.3, 102.1. You're listening to your community radio. This is The Other Side of the News. And we're talking about roller derby here. And the question of how violent is it? I mean, the collisions, clearly people get hurt in this. I mean, what is, how do you bring somebody into a sport that, you know, in many ways looks like it's football and hockey?
Well, I tell people it's a lot like football or hockey, but without all those sissy pads. So it is a very aggressive sport. It is can be perceived as a somewhat violent sport, but, you know, as if with any contact sport, there's going to be injuries. It is something that we have to face. That's kind of a reality of the nature of the game, and we've had some pretty serious ones. I think most of the ones I've seen, fortunately, that are the most gruesome have not been with our team, but it is at a constant risk of injury or just over time, like any sport, grinding down parts of your body that are important, like your knees.
So I'm not trying to get into what you specifically do for a living, but what sort of backgrounds and in daily lives do people have when they're not, mashing other people in roller derby?
Personally, I'm a graphic designer. Ava's a professor, but we have everything.
So you're a professor and roller derby.
Dr. Jesse Fox, School of Communication, Ohio State University.
Okay.
It can vary from anything from lawyers to stay-at-home moms to any career you can possibly think of. Most people do have day jobs. You know, every team probably has a stay-at-home mom or two, but it varies just as widely as anybody you'd meet down the street.
Okay, so when we look at this sport, what is the attraction? What attracts, I mean, clearly in both your cases, you know, highly educated people to essentially a very, very physical sport, either of you. I mean, what is the attraction to roller derby?
I think as a fan, I went to the very first bout with my wife, who is now a skater. We were brought in by a skater who just retired from the league last season. The lure of it was, it's different. It's like we were kind of talking about off air. It's not covered by the mass media. You kind of have to. Back then, you kind of had to know someone, you know, to get in. And it's so cool is that you're so close to the action. You can sit literally in a place called suicide seating, Bob. You can sit right along the rope that lines the track, and if you're lucky enough, you get to, you know, a souvenir roller girl falls into your lap after a big hit. You know, we've seen fans build beer pyramids, you know, with empty cans of beer and hoping that a skater comes flying into it. But you're literally, so in hockey, you're separated by the glass. In football, you're separated by about 20 yards of bench players. In basketball, I guess basketball would be the closest thing because you're right there near the court, but you can literally sit on the track.
And what was your attraction to it?
In terms of getting started, I was working on my dissertation. I think that probably says enough.
Okay,
I was a little frustrated.
Having wrote a dissertation, there was a tremendous amount of tension, anxiety, general angst, and you decided you would deal with it by becoming a roller girl?
Well, when you write your dissertation, it's really that point in your graduate career where you're feeling the most incompetent and the most useless. And so I figured I had to find something that I was more incompetent at. And since I am absolutely terrible on skates, I decided that
so
I was going to...
You weren't that good a skater when you became a...
I'd skated
into roller derby?
Yeah, I'd skated at some birthday parties as a kid, I was really, really terrible when I started. I mean, I was so bad that when I showed up to, quote, try out for the league, they were like, you need to kind of stand over in the corner over there at the skating rink and don't touch anyone and just kind of skate in circles until you can do that without falling. So that's really the level that I started at. So,
no, that's amazing because I used to be a roller skating racer, right? And very early on, from an early age, we learned to, I don't know, do you guys still have stoppers? We'd get up on your stoppers and literally run and come in low in those corners. And,
yeah, we very much do that. You use your wheels just as much as you use your toe stops. And really, as the sport progresses, it's becoming more and more used to, you know, run and jump on your toe stops.
A lot of people perceive the sport as completely just being racing in a circle,
right.
And there's been a lot of strategic innovations in the sport that have actually brought more of a slow derby play style as well, where, you know, when we start now, instead of two people taking off and going as fast as they can, we actually start in a scrum like rugby.
Hmm.
So it's bodies slamming into bodies, and it's pushing and, you know, using strength to kind of get through
that.
Are there
some fake I'm going fast kind of quick stop to take people out action going on?
Absolutely. Juking is a really key skill, and hockey stopping and trying to make quick motions and throwing your, you know, especially as a jammer, I don't jam, Paige does that for me. but, you know, you really need to kind of find out how to cognitively challenge the blockers, get them to look the other way, and it's a lot of chicanery.
What about, do they still allow, I mean, the heyday of roller derby when I used to watch it, must have been back in the 70s, a long time. You could actually whip, used to be able to grab and almost whip the jammer around the track. Is that still allowed?
We still very much do that. We push and whip jammers, and it's as a jammer, it's a very nice thing to get whipped because it does give you that extra oomph to get through the pack that you might not have on your own, so...
So what are the rules with that? You can just literally grab your jammer and whip her around the track?
Yeah. I mean, as long as you do not send her into another opponent's back, because a back is an illegal target zone, you can whip your jammer anyway from Sunday.
And what are the other illegal target zones?
Anything below the knees or above the shoulders. And that's about it. You can hit them, you know, with your shoulder, with your hips, and their entire front is legal.
What about tripping? It seems like you're going fast on skates. Somebody could easily or intentionally catch somebody's skate.
Yeah, that's considered part of the illegal blocking zones. So basically, tripping's considered a low block. Because you're catching them below the knees.
Mm-hmm.
Just like it'd be if you hit them in the head, that'd be considered a high block.
I've never seen anyone on the All-Stars ever do that on purpose.
I trip over my own feet. But that's because they're rather sizable, so that's my own natural grace.
So is there an advantage to having large feet in...
Sadly, no.
No. I was thinking it gave you, opened up your blocking space.
Nope. Just gives you more, you know, more things to get caught on other places and to trip on, so.
Yeah. On the other side, though, I'm at the exact other end of the spectrum and have very small feet, and sometimes I just fall forward because there's not enough foot to land on, so.
Okay, when you're in the scrums, is there any illegal stuff going on that the referees can't see? You know, that kind of gouging, pinching, grabbing...
There are, you know, our team is renowned for playing classy roller derby, so to speak. We, you know, we're very nice people on the track and off the track, and sometimes we've played teams where there's a lot of, oh, they can't see this, and you get that elbow in the ribs.
Kind of the like the bad girls, like the bad boy Pistons, elbows, and, you know, all this stuff that looks accidental, but
some illegal,
you know,
grabbing.
It's intentional.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a penalty if it's not called. So, you know, some teams take advantage of that when in the close quarters of a jam start scrum.
Well, you ought to be thankful there's no New Jersey team, as Bob Dylan would say. Anything's legal in Jersey, just as long as you don't get caught.
Yeah. So, when you're describing the game, what are you emphasizing? Is it the jammer? Are you actually, as an announcer, are you explaining anything? Are you totally partisan? You're the advocate for the Ohio roller girls?
It all depends on what capacity I'm in. If I'm doing a home bout for Ohio, then yes, I'm slightly pro Ohio, you know, just for crowd interaction and things like that. But when I do tournaments sponsored by the Women's Flat Track Derby Association, it's completely impartiality. You know, you can't show favoritism. But when I'm calling about, It's a lot of taking in as much as you can and describing it 3 seconds later. Because there is a thing actually called coaching from the mic. I can't say that team so-and-so's jammer is about to be released from the penalty box, because over the PA system, a bunch of skaters on the track are going, oh, yep, here she comes. That's considered coaching from the mic, so I can't say that. But it's you know, talking about the jammers, how they're getting through the pack. If a pack player does something nice to open an inside line, give that blocker credit and things like that. And I try to do that, too, with the writings on the Ohio Roller Girls website at ohiorollergirls.com.
Now, do you have any actual plays like in football, like a 22 blast? You're going to hit quick up the middle. You got a couple jammers. You know, you got the equivalents of off tackles and or fairly sophisticated blocking schemes. Is that going on?
Absolutely. Paige and I are actually both members of the training committee, which is kind of the group and body of skaters that's kind of organizing and training and helping develop strategies with our coaches and captains. So we all kind of work together. We watch tape to observe what other teams do. So for example, we played Tri-City last week, and we observed in watching tape of them that they had a very different way of lining up in the scrum start. And so we practiced that, and we came up with counterplays to kind of work against that, that we, you know, executed throughout the bout based on calls made by the blockers and the jammers. So the sport, because you're constantly playing offense and defense, you have to be aware at all times. You have to be communicating. You can't have quiet on the track. You have to be non-verbally communicating, yelling your head off at your teammates, listening to your coaches from the benches. It's just a lot of synchrony, and more than most sports, I would say, because of the pace of the sport and the challenges of playing offense and defense, you can't just skate through the game. You have to be thinking constantly. It's very cognitively exhausting to play the sport as well.
Well, yeah, you keep talking about simultaneously being offense or defense. But when your jammer's in front, are you essentially on offense, or are you still thinking defensively as well while your person's piling up points? I mean,
yeah, I mean, so you have, you know, the pack itself, which is the group of the blockers, and they have to stay in a certain proximity to each other. So when the jammer is going around the lap and they're outside of the pack, at that point, yes, you're technically only playing you know, offense or defense, depending on which jammer's outside of the pack. However, it's very short-lived, because a lap does not take very long, and so you can't forget about the other, because you want to make sure to be lined up properly for, like, you know, if it's the other jammer that's lapping. And, you know, you have to make sure that you're in place and you're in a wall or whatever position you need to be in to stop them when they come next time around.
So typically you have about 10 seconds of reaction time to execute what you're doing, get back in position, try to switch from defense to offense, and then get back in position for the other plays that you're intending on doing, and also simultaneously make calls to a lot. So maybe three of your players are playing defense and one are playing offense. So you have to kind of make those allocations in real time as you play.
So are you calling out signals?
There's a lot of screaming. I do a lot of screaming.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you communicate as to, are there any hand signals? Are you screaming Omaha like, you know, Peyton Manning? Is there something that indicates what you're about to do?
From what I've observed, Bob, I mean, there's a lot of nonverbal communication going on. I've seen, if you watch the footage that Rob and I have been shooting, you'll see that there's a lot of just eye gestures, chin gestures, and nods going on with all the screaming that seems to get a lot of people moving to where they belong to be. I see it happening. You can see that footage.
We're one of those teams that we don't have a whole lot of members of our league. Someone like the Canadian teams, where they have 100 or 200 skaters in their league, Ohio really only has about 30. So they've been playing with each other for quite a long time. And, you know, just to watch them sometimes, I'm fairly confident we could play a silent jam if we had to, just because they've been playing with each other so much, you know, that they work really well together.
Now, are you under contract to a team, or could you desert if you got a better offer in the middle of the season? You could just leave your team, or
what does that offer entail? We don't get paid, you know.
Yeah, we don't get paid.
Maybe they have more free beer at the after party. I don't know. You know, I call our sport semi-professional, because we are playing at the very top level in the world.
And you're
charging
people to see you play.
Yes, but we don't make any money. We pay our dues every month just to be able to afford the rent on our warehouse. So,
okay, Jessica Avatar Fox, Paige Bleed, each of you 30 seconds. Last thoughts on why people should support the Ohio Roller girls?
I know that Columbus is a very strong football town, but come check it out. It's the best sport I've ever found, and I have yet to have anyone come to the game and not have fun.
Buy local and support women's sports.
All right, sustainability. Last word, Inspector Muffin.
Our next home bout, May 10th, against the Atlanta Roller Girls. We went to champs last year, so did Atlanta. It's going to be a battle of two of the best teams in the world. So May 10th, get to the Lausche building at the fairgrounds.
All right, this is Dr. Bob Fitchagas bringing you the other side of the news. And Jerry Bello, are you going to keep covering the Ohio Roller Girls?
But of course. I mean, they're Columbus's team.
ColumbusFreePress.com. Check it out, Ohio Roller Girls.